It's really nice to be here again. I can't remember quite when I was here last, about 3 years ago, I think, and to see some old friends as well. My name's Chris Rose. I'm the director of Amos Trust. Amos is a small creative human rights organization set up by a bloke called Garth Hewitt, who some of you may have heard of or seen or whatever over the years, about 35 years ago now. And we try to do three things. We try to challenge injustice, to build hope, and often we think building hope is about building involvement, and to create change. And we do that by working with really vibrant grassroots partners who we would say are developing local responses to global situations. So that's the kind of spiel about what we do. This morning I'm going to talk about hope. And it's very, very easy to lose hope. It's very easy to look around us, and I just need to mention the word Brexit, and all of us are in despair. There's so many contexts to completely lose hope. And today what I want to talk about is spaces of hope. Because hope isn't a linear process. It doesn't work in that way. And the stories from the Bible don't kind of work in that way when they talk about hope as well. And this morning it was lovely because the lectionary reading is the one from Luke, which is, if you like, the mission statement of Jesus, what he was all about. And it's very much at the heart of what we're about at Amos Trust, freedom from the captives, release of sight for the blind, and all those things. So it's very much that. And the first one is about the everyday miracles as opposed to the other, and a person who is absolutely hopeless. And Elijah, if you remember, he'd been off and he'd confronted the prophets of Baal. There'd been this incredibly dramatic scene. He'd withheld rain for years. Then he'd had this big thing with the prophets of Baal. And it ended up with them all being slaughtered, him having this wonderful sacrifice to God. And he felt, I've done it. It's all worked out fine. We've done this thing. God's been vindicated. Everything should be fine. And immediately he's told that he's going to be killed by Jezebel. And he just crumbles in himself and runs away. And God finds him and brings him to the mountain here. And he's in this absolutely hopeless situation. And for God then, in that situation, he's not confronted by the big voice of the earthquake, wind or fire. It's this gentle whisper, or some of us remember, a still small voice. It's that gentle whisper of hope which meets him. And the challenge once again of what are you doing here? For Jesus, when he came to Nazareth, when he came back to Nazareth, he had spent 40 days in the wilderness. Whenever we go to Palestine, and we do a lot of work in Palestine, we take people out into the wilderness. And we always think, in our picture of the wilderness, it's just this horrible sort of barren place. It's actually a place of staggering connection with God, where you have a sense of your insignificance, but also you see the sun moving across the rocks. At that time of year, there's grass as well in different bits. And it's a place of real encounter. And he comes back from this place of encounter where he's been tested, which is the temptations, which obviously in Lent you'll hear far more about. He's been tested, and he comes back and says, this is what it's about. And central to both those things is this message of hope. It's about how hope encounters us and engages with us. And there's an expression I was reading in a poem this week, which was talking about spaces of hope. And it's saying hope comes in spaces. It's not a linear process. So when Jesus gives his mission statement, he doesn't go, it's going to be like this, then like this, then like this, like this, and then everything's going to be fine. It's about how he engages with people. And we see it in his life time and time again, how he engages with people when he brings hope to those who feel hopeless. And for us, those spaces of hope, it's about how we respond to them, how we nurture them, how we create them. And I'll say about all of those in our work, but it's also far, far wider than that. It's how we recognize how we engage. So we've got three main areas of work. The first of those, which is our smallest area of work, has been rooted in Nicaragua and is still rooted in Nicaragua. Our partners there, a fantastic organization who in the last 6 months have gone through immense political turmoil as well and ongoing turmoil. There, They work with rural communities who've been affected by climate change. Nicaragua is one of the top five countries most affected by climate change. It's also the second poorest country in the Western Hemisphere. So you can imagine the combination of those two things. So many of those programs go in with the answers. And they tell a great story there about the mother elephant and the mother chicken. And the two of them were great friends. They did everything together. Everywhere they went together was the same thing. Then one day the chicken sat down. And mother elephant was really worried, thinking, you're not doing any exercise. You're not getting up. You're not looking after yourself. And the chicken says, no, I've got to sit down. This went on for about 3 days. And the elephant's getting more and more concerned. And the chicken says, no, I've got to sit down on my eggs. Went on a couple more days. And mother elephant says, well, if you won't be able to get up, let me help you. And gently lifts the chicken up, puts her to one side, and sits down on the eggs for her. And they say so much development work is like that. It doesn't listen to the community. It doesn't engage with the community. It doesn't start with the community. And if you want to bring real hope and build real hope, you listen to people. You start with that. You recognize the seeds of hope which are there. And all their work, they go into these communities, they're invited in for 5 years. And at the end of the 5 years, everything must be sustainable. So they won't even take in solar panels because solar panels or batteries run out and there's no way of replacing those there. So everything must be sustainable. It's organic. It's about canopy matter. And there's a great quote. My daughter's actually been over there and she sent through this thing, which is kind of sweet. It's a bit odd reading something from my daughter, but I'll read it anyway. When every day we hear another story of how climate change is destroying our planet, listening to how a drip irrigation system from a plastic Coca-Cola bottle makes such a difference to a family's life shows how rural communities are challenging climate change by demanding a better world for their children. It was then that a saying by one of Amos's Palestinian partners came to mind, Dr. Abdel Fattah, Abbas Roar from Bethlehem. We don't wait for miracles to happen, we provoke them. And it's very much the case there. They're going into communities, they're provoking everyday miracles. And they're not the huge, big, dramatic lightning floods. All the huge, big, dramatic things. They're that gentle whisper which gets alongside people, hears it, and transforms and equips societies. They particularly work with women there to empower them so they can use their land so they have food security. And they work with leaders and church leaders so they can then start challenging government and demanding their rights. Later this year, we're bringing our partners over for a climate justice conference. We're focusing on three things there. We're doing it with... are you a member of Eco Church, is that right? Yeah. We're doing it with Arusha and the Eco Church movement. And we're looking to tie in local communities in the global south with local communities here. And so there must be local responses. That's how we feed each other. The second thing we're doing is hearing voices from the global south, enabling us to understand the impact and a theology which is rooted in that experience. And the third thing is to develop new resources from that as well. So that's our first area of the work. The second area of the work, as you've heard, is Palestine. With Palestine, it's desperately hard to see hope. Desperately, desperately hard. Our partners in Gaza, where it's far, far worse, said to us recently, for young people here, life and death have the same value. They see no hope for the future. And that's a dreadful situation. And we seek to bring hope through acts of solidarity. For them to know you actually care about the situation in Gaza is so important because they feel completely alone. And also through our partners, our two partners, then one of them trains young people. They do a load of work about life skills and employment skills, trying to fit them into the few gaps which do exist. There's about 60% youth unemployment. So as you can imagine, it's really, really hard, but it's giving them hope and addressing the psychological impacts of that. Our hospital we work with, they're particularly dealing with young people who've been shot and crippled through the recent protests, and also addressing breast cancer screening. If you're a woman in Gaza, you're 3 times more likely to die of breast cancer than you are in the UK. And it's completely preventable, the reasons why. There's leading hospitals 5 miles away. So for us, it's about bringing hope, recognizing hope in those situations. And with our partners on the West Bank, it's about nurturing those signs of hope we see, enabling hope to find some roots. And our third area's work is with young people on the streets, children on the streets, and particularly with girls on the streets. For the last few years, we've been developing this in several countries because we found it's about 8 times harder for girls on the streets to come off the streets than it is for boys. Because projects have worked out how to work with boys over many years, but for girls on the streets, they're really isolated, they're hidden away, they get trapped in a whole load of lifestyles which they don't want to be involved in at all. And also, girls on the streets are blamed for their situation. It's seen as their fault, whereas boys aren't blamed in the same way. And our local projects there, each of them are working with those girls, and we're calling it On Her Terms. They're journeying with those girls as they recognize their value and their worth as children created in the image of a loving God, gradually transforming them as they see that hope. And for us in our lives as well, there's those aspects where we have to build hope and create hope, to bring hope to situations which hope is not seen. And the only way we can do that is by gently whispering it in, by getting alongside, by speaking truth, by recognizing the worth of those who are seen as untouchable. All the things we see in the Gospels time and time again. Bringing that hope into that situation gently. We also have to recognize where hope exists. We have to make sure that when we see that it's like green shoots. If you put manure on green shoots, they grow. Otherwise, it's just a pile of manure. And for us, we nurture those green shoots we see and try to recognize those. And then with hope, you never know where it's going to go to. It can be a moment and drift away. Or else you can find it transforms the whole future in ways you can never, ever see. And that's the wonderful aspect about it, because it just says, be faithful. Follow what you believe in, because ultimately we have no say whatsoever as to where it ends up. All we can do is what we know we should do today and believe that something incredibly transformative may happen by this God who gently whispers to us.